The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We are across the pond, back in the friendly confines of our Ed Stone broadcasting studio. We're here, and I believe this is the hottest day of the year for the UK. We actually left Oklahoma City in the midst of a lot of overcast weather, as I mentioned on the radio over there. So to go from Oklahoma in July to the UK and to actually have it heat up, that's unusual. And of course, for heating up here in the UK, we're talking about 86, 87 degrees Fahrenheit. So really not that hot, but it's definitely warm for the UK, and a beautiful, beautiful day. There's a breeze blowing. And even as I look out the window right now, we've got a wedding rehearsal going on, a big wedding planned outside for this Sunday. So that's exciting to see that, to see lots of visitors in town as well for a church camp out. So we left the SEP program that ended on Sunday, and the campers left Monday from the Oklahoma campus. And then we get here. It's not a summer educational program, but it is a big family camp out going on for 3 or 4 days. Quite a few brethren coming up from the European nations of the Netherlands. I'm not sure if anyone's here from France, but we've got some good representation. And hopefully I'll get out to see a few more of them later on this afternoon. Well, a few comments following yesterday's program. Richard, of course, subbing in for me while I was traveling. It says, good morning from North Carolina. Thanks for the morning brunch. I sit waiting eagerly every morning. And then another one here. Wonderful program, Mr. Palmer. It's enjoyable to watch you, especially as you reference Mr. Flurry and Mr. Armstrong during the program. Have a peaceful and productive day. And then a few comments in response to Wednesday's show, the last one I gave in Edmond. Best start of my day watching the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Another one. Good morning, everyone. Listening in from Fiji. And then this one says, William Barr ruled his spirit well in the hearing. Our Bible study that particular day was on ruling your spirit well. So this is someone commenting on the Attorney General keeping his composure, even as he came under a fierce attack from Democrats. Another listener says, how great it is to be around children in God's church. Such respect for elders and authority. They are constantly helping the elders and assisting others. What a way of life. Such peace, such a peaceful way. And then finally, one listener writes, hey friends, let's share these broadcasts as far as we can to increase the viewership on a daily basis. The world needs to hear what's happening. The world needs the truth. So that comes in, those responses from a few of you listeners. And now to the news. By the way, if we have time, I'm hoping to begin a study into Theodore Roosevelt. This is some material that we used at the SEP program a week or two ago. So hopefully we can save some time at the end of this program to start getting into that history. But first, some of the news items that were in the stack today. The U.S. begins its withdrawal from Germany. We talked about this a few weeks ago, but as we're seeing in more and more of the news items, we're beginning to see what this looks like. The U.S. is moving its 2nd Cavalry Regiment. That'll be the first to go. The local, Richard was saying how the local has a pretty balanced coverage of this at least this beginning of the severing of ties between the U.S. and Germany, because most of the coverage has talked about just how horrible President Trump is. You know, they're all the same. Pretty much. But this one from the local talks more about Miss Merkel. And it says Merkel from the start did little to hide her disdain for Trump. So that's factored into this as well. We had a program, I believe this was from Monday, where we talked about America coming apart, even as Europe is coming together. And so we're keeping a close watch on the U.S. withdrawal from Germany, pulling those troops out. It's not all or in its entirety just yet, but the process has begun. We're beginning to remove those troops. And then you put it together with some of the other things that we've discussed, even recently, that right as America is coming apart, right as America is unraveling before the eyes of the world, you have the European nations coming together. You have Germany leading the way. You have Germany calling the shots. Very significant. A very significant development. It is easy to focus in on the sickness from within, and we have a fair bit to say on that here in just a moment. But as I was discussing with Sam on the ride back from the airport yesterday, just as we were filling each other in on the situation in the U.S., as I've been there for a number of weeks, and he updated me on what's happening here with the protocol going into stores, restaurants, and whatever else, and all of the social programs that continue, the subsidies, the government handouts, our nation's going deeper and deeper and deeper into debt. And who could have ever envisioned us doing this to ourselves, bringing this sickness upon ourselves and fully exposing ourselves to enemies from without? And so you see the United States and Germany splitting apart, and all the sickness that we see in our nations, and really the worst of the hysteria is in the United States and Great Britain. In a lot of ways, with the COVID-19, Europe is moving on. I've got a story later on in my notes about the Netherlands, the way that they're approaching masks, and they're saying there's no proof that shows it even helps. So no, we're not going to require this. Over and again, flying on American Airlines, one announcement after another. If you don't wear your mask, you may not be able to fly with us again. Wearing a mask, in breathing the breath you're exhaling for 8, 9, 10 hours, and this is supposed to be healthy. This is supposed to reduce the level of sickness. This is supposed to protect people. Well, we'll come to that in just a second. I want to begin here, though, with President Obama's eulogy. At least it was supposed to be a eulogy. Here he's at the memorial service for John Lewis. He's supposed to be mourning this civil rights activist. Instead, he's attacking the United States of America. Instead, he's expressing this contemptuous, vile, filthy hatred for his own nation. It's just incredible to watch. He talked about mail-in voting, all the talking points from the Democrat playlist or playbook, seeking racial justice. And then there he is comparing President Trump to Bull Connor and George Wallace, these individuals that promoted violence in the 1960s, violence against the civil rights activists, as if it's just like that, or maybe worse under a Trump administration. Maybe it's even worse than the 60s. As far as civil rights is concerned, here's Barack Obama from the John Lewis memorial service yesterday, clip one.
Bull Connor may be gone, but today we witness with our own eyes police officers kneeling on the necks of Black Americans.
Police officers kneeling on the necks. He uses the plural sense in both cases. Police officers, plural, kneeling on the necks, plural. I mean, it's just happening all over the place. And we need racial justice. Because there's just policemen everywhere kneeling on necks of Black Americans. Here's that Antiochus spirit. doing everything he can to divide, to stir up racial animosity and hatred. Bull Connor, he was a prominent politician back in the 1960s, early 70s. He vehemently opposed the civil rights movement and is remembered for tolerating violence against civil rights activists. And so there's Barack Obama yesterday saying Bull Connor may be gone, but look, we still have all these police officers ramming their knees into the necks of black people. The same old problems, they're still there. As if America today is just like it was in the Deep South back in the 1960s. Really unbelievable. And it's at a memorial service, of all things. Here's what he went on to say, clip two.
George Wallace may be gone, but we can witness our federal government sending agents to use tear gas and batons against peaceful demonstrators.
Look at all those people, by the way, in church. Hundreds of them. Cheering them on. The social distancing and all of that. Church services, they don't apply when it's promoting a Democrat cause or talking point from the Democrat playlist. It does not apply. Now, John Lewis, he's a famous Democrat. And so we stop everything and make sure that the memorial service, make sure everyone gets to come to that. There will be no such service for Herman Cain, the prominent black Republican. Well, that would be a violation of social distancing. We can't, that would be like a Trump rally, so we can't do that. Here's Barack Obama saying George Wallace may be gone, but we still have these agents of the federal government using tear gas and batons against peaceful demonstrators. Peaceful demonstrators. Here again, George Wallace, prominent politician from the 1960s, early 70s, and he too is remembered for fighting against the civil rights movement. And that's where we are today in 2020. So says Barack Obama. You know what's amazing about that history? These two individuals that he talks about, Bull Connor and George Wallace, both prominent Democrats. And here are the Democrats today. They want to carry on with their arguments, their narratives, and pretend as if it's the Republicans who carry on with that legacy. In fact, that's their own history. And you don't see a lot about canceling out that history. The strong ties that the Democrat Party had to resisting the civil rights movement, to resisting against the abolition of slavery. And that's continued right up into our modern era. Some of these prominent Democrats that were dying off maybe a decade or two ago, that if you go back far enough into their political careers, well, you can find some pretty ugly details. But that doesn't cancel them out. They just continue right on. You know, the New York Times, someone noted this on Twitter, they had a montage comparing President Trump to George Wallace. I mean, it was ready almost immediately after Barack Obama compared President Trump to George Wallace in that eulogy yesterday. It was as if the New York Times knew that he was going to make that comparison. What a coincidence. There's Barack Obama, the hero, as far as the radical left is concerned, as far as the mainstream media goes, they worshipped him. They still do. He comes out with a speech yesterday, and sure enough, the Times is right there to compare George Wallace with President Trump. Tucker Carlson, I didn't bring the clip, but last night on his program, he said that Barack Obama is one of the sleaziest and most dishonest figures in the history of American politics. That's true. That's true. That's another way of saying what we've said in our literature. America under attack. Saving America from the radical left temporarily. The article from the Trumpet 2 years ago that we quote so often. And the Nunes memo exposes the unseen threat to America. In that one, my father said, how can you explain President Obama's many lies and the willingness of the American people to accept them? How do you explain this? He gets up there and he says that these agents, these federal agents, are using tear gas and batons against peaceful demonstrators. He says nothing about the rioting. He says nothing about the violence. He says nothing about the looting, the smashing, the burning, the targeting of police officers. He, like his allies in the media, in his eyes, it's just a peaceful demonstration. These are people who stand in front of burning buildings with a live TV feed and say it's mostly peaceful. And those that would acknowledge the violence say, well, I understand. I can understand the rage. You see, it's justified. But there's the former president yesterday saying that the law enforcement is the problem and the demonstrators are being mistreated. The demonstrators are the heroes. Law enforcement, they're the villains. It says here, this is from Saving America, it says, talking about the radical left, they have no respect for the rule of law. They believe they are above the law. That's why the rules don't apply to them, you see. You can have a big memorial service for George Floyd's family. You can have a big memorial service for John Lewis. You can have demonstrations by the thousands all over the United States. Thousands and thousands of people coming together. And then Herman Cain dies, and what's the cause? Well, Chris Cuomo told you last night. He went to that Trump rally. So he got COVID-19 because he went to a rally of 6,000 people. All these other thousands and thousands of people coming together for the radical left movement. It's as if, I guess, they're immune to the disease. You see how the game is played. They think they're above the law. So we listened to Chris Cuomo preaching to us last night. Where is that clip? I know I'm ahead of myself, but play that if you can find it, Sam.
We wish his family well, and we wish that he rest in peace. And I wish that this president have no peace until he thinks about what he's exposing people to. He didn't even mention that Mr. Cain was at his rally among the maskless masses right before he was diagnosed.
The rally of the maskless masses right before he came down with COVID-19. It was as if they were gleeful that this man died. He was 74, by the way. Died of COVID-19, and they jumped right on that. Ooh, he went to the Tulsa rally. So that must have been the reason. So really, we can kind of blame, well, really, we can blame President Trump. That's Chris Cuomo saying, we wish Herman Cain's family well, but I wish that this president has no peace. That's what I wish for Donald Trump. Look at what he's exposing people to. They're above the law, you see, like my father said a couple years ago. He said, leftist radicals hate the Constitution. Barack Obama has stated explicitly that it's an outdated document and criticized it for being a charter of negative liberties. So we got to get rid of it. We've got to do away with it. In America Under Attack, he has that well-known quote we've used so many times from Mr. Armstrong, talking about the psychological warfare of the communist insurrection, the communist infiltration. They want to bring down the government by force and violence. And that's what we're seeing in so many pockets across the U.S. society. Bring down the government. My father says, regarding the devil and his influence, I know he's doing everything he can to sink America, and I've seen him use a man at the top, an Antiochus, to bring down an organization. And I'm watching as this government takes one step after another that is weakening this country and hastening the fulfillment of some of the most terrifying prophecies of the Bible. And there he was again, this pawn in the devil's hand. There he was again yesterday, hastening the fulfillment of some of the most terrifying prophecies in the Bible. Working to bring down the United States of America. That's Satan's goal. Here's one more clip from the funeral service or the memorial service yesterday, clip three.
There are those in power who are doing their darndest to discourage people from voting by closing polling locations and targeting minorities and students with restrictive ID laws and attacking our voting rights with surgical precision, even undermining the Postal Service in the run-up to an election that's going to be dependent on mail-in ballots so people don't get sick.
All of the talking points from the Democrat playbook. They're trying to discourage voting, those evil, racist Republicans. George Wallace, Bull Connor. They're trying to suppress the vote. All those restrictive ID laws that you would require an ID for voting for the President of the United States. We fed my family, trying to get my daughters. This has been a week of transition, just trying to take care of a lot of miscellaneous things, getting my daughter's driving permit. Then my son went in for his driving test. Then the trips over to the tag agency, all the documents, filling these forms out, getting your ID. And then the airport, just the travel, and especially with COVID-19. You've got to have the license, the passport. You've got to have the documentation just to get into the UK, even though I live here, even though I have a visa to live here. All these forms, it went on for page after page after page. Where are you coming from? What nations did you visit? How long are you going to stay in the UK? Where will you stay? It may be that you need to self-quarantine. What are the dates? When will you depart? Filling out page after page. I almost missed my plane because of it. I didn't realize we had to do this in advance. And yet, I guess if you go into a polling booth, you just show up, you say, hey, I'm Joe Schmo, I'm here to vote. And this is what they want. No documentation, I guess. No ID, because too restrictive. It's complete and utter craziness. And the reason they push and they push and they push for this is because they want to cheat. They want illegals voting. They want criminals voting. And now they want the mail-in ballots because it just opens the door wide open for fraud. The Attorney General said that he said as much the other day. They want all the, there was an ABC, I think it was ABC, a local report from Florida or somewhere, where this reporter, he sent 100 letters to one P.O. box. He made it out like this was a polling station. He sent 100 letters through the mail, and the USPS only delivered 97 of them. So 3% didn't even make it. Now, that's just because of delivery problems. Leave aside if you've got someone in there who really does want the election to go in a certain direction. They want to cheat. They, like my father has explained, they will do anything to return to power. And so here is the former president yesterday giving what sounded like, at some points, a stump speech during a political rally. And at other points, like he's this distinguished professor from Columbia telling all the students about how horrible the United States is. Well, yeah, there's policemen, plural, with their necks, with their knees in the necks of ordinary African Americans. Now they're using the, you see how it's all woven together with the COVID scare, the mask mania, the lockdown. Dr. Fauci yesterday, he made this comment about protective headgear. It's now the suggestion, the admonition, it's more than a mask. Well, that only covers your mouth and your nose. Here's what he had to say, clip four.
I think we're going to get to a point where eye protection is recommended.
You know, it might. I mean, if you really want perfect protection of your mucosal surfaces, just for your audience, Jan, as you very well know, you have mucosa in the nose, mucosa in the mouth, but you also have mucosa in the eye. And that's one of the things that, you know, theoretically, you should protect all the mucosal surfaces. So if you have goggles or an eye shield, you should use it.
If you've got goggles or you've seen the big windshields that people put on the front of their faces and a mask underneath. And we're walking around as if this is just entirely normal. I was telling my daughter yesterday just how, you know, you look at some Orthodox Jews in traveling. So they've got the kippah, and then above that, they've got the big hat. And then when they travel on a plane, they've got the big, and nothing against them as far as their customs are concerned. But I just think, what a rigmarole to go through to get on the plane. And then you have to have a big case for the hat and then the long coat and so on. And I've always looked at that and thought, I'm just glad I don't have to carry all this gear when I'm traveling internationally. Now we've all got to carry the gear. And the mask isn't good enough. You've got to have goggles. You've got to have the protective face shield. This is what Dr. Fauci said on March 8th, 3-4 months ago, clip five.
Right now, people should not be walking. There's no reason to be walking around with a mask. When you're in the middle of an outbreak, wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better, and it might even block a droplet. But it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is.
That was just what he said. Remember that montage? I think I played it Monday. You had all these other experts saying it actually hurts the problem. It makes the problem worse because you keep reaching. Look at Jerry Nadler the other day in that hearing. Sam was watching a feed that just had the camera on Nadler for about 30 minutes, and he's just back and forth. He's adjusting the face mask. He's got his hand. This is what you're supposed to not do. Touch your eyes. Touch your face. This is how the germ spreads. Now it's all masks all the time. It's like the attorney general said at that hearing the other day. Well, was this responsible for President Trump not to heed the advice of experts to put on the mask? And the attorney general said, well, what expert advice? You mean the one from 3-4 months ago that said masks are useless, or the expert advice today that says you must put it on? They go on and they contradict themselves, and sometimes they contradict themselves within weeks. But this is the law now. This is the law, and we're just supposed to play along with the new rules, the ever-changing rules. You know all about the models. You know all about the estimates. You can look, by the way, at the weekly chart of deaths in the United States. This is put out by the CDC. And the big spike is in April. That's when you had weekly deaths of 71,000, 78,000, 76,000. You can see it there on the chart, the numbers on the far right. But then look at more recently. It takes them a few weeks to update these figures. So the last week there, week 27, ending on July 4th, you see that the total number of deaths in the United States, 49,200. Last year, the same week, 2019, total deaths, 52,344. That's 3,000 less. So this is the overall deaths, never mind what they tell you about, oh, these are COVID deaths. People are dying every day in the United States. 8 or 9,000 people every week. 51, 52, 53,000. Well, in the last week where we have 100% of the figures added in, 49,200. So it's the curve is flattened. The curve is leveled off. We're right here now at the very bottom. And now it's all masks. Maybe goggles. Maybe the windshield as well. How much longer before he's going to be suggesting the hazmat suit? Cover the full body. You're going outside. You've got to protect yourself. Where does it stop? So they use this. Even if there's this damaging side effect or that damaging side effect, we've got to do it. Listen to the CDC director. This is Robert Redfield. He was speaking on July 14th, so it's from a couple weeks ago. I'm not sure why it surfaced just yesterday. But he's talking about the cost of this lockdown, how it impacts other aspects of our society. This is clip 6.
But there has been another cost that we've seen, particularly in high schools. We're seeing, sadly, far greater suicides now than we are deaths from COVID. We're seeing far greater deaths from drug overdose that are above excess than what we had as background than we are seeing deaths from COVID.
Now, those are the stats. Those are the figures. That's the CDC director himself saying, look, the bigger problem among the young people in particular, suicides, drug overdoses, that's much more common than dying from COVID-19. And yet, the kids, they got to stay home. It's too dangerous. It's too dangerous to go to school. Well, what about suicides and drug overdoses? Doesn't matter. We're in the midst of a pandemic. Truth fails, just like Isaiah prophesied. You can see how important the Trumpet magazine is. You can see how important the Key of David is. You can see how important this program is. Just to get the truth to those who will listen, to those who will open their ears and open their eyes, to hear, to see the truth. I don't have time to go through these other articles. This Tyranny of Health by Theodore Dalrymple. The basic premise of it is that the goal of goals is to live your life as long as possible. Extend it a few months, a few years. Herman Cain was 74. You listen to Chris Cuomo, he was on his way to living to 120. Here's Theodore Dalrymple. He says, but we should remember that life is not well or badly lived according only to its length. Mozart died at 36. But would anyone say that his life would have been better lived had he survived to 72 but without having composed any of his music? People, moreover, sacrifice their lives for any number of reasons, the most noblest to the most ignoble. What about just living your life, whether you live to 50 or 70 or 90? To really live the abundant life. Jesus was, his life was cut short in his early 30s. I guess that wouldn't be tolerated by today's experts. 33 years of age, as he made the ultimate sacrifice. Think about how many of our boys, America's boys, Britain's boys, teenagers in some cases, sacrificed their lives for their countries. And yet today, here we are, paralyzed with fear. America's muzzled freedom, it says over at Law and Liberty, as this author, he bases the article on language used by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. In the style and language of Solzhenitsyn, it's worth considering the attributes of America's new muzzled freedom. He talks in this piece about the constant fear. He talks about the corruption. To call the low high and the high low, that's corruption. To call the stupid wise, to call the fanatical statesmanlike, to call the narrow-minded prophetic, and the single-minded just, to praise and gratitude about the past as a virtue. See, that's a virtue. Pull those statues down. That's a peaceful protest. Never mind being grateful for that history, thankful for the freedoms. It's virtuous today to destroy, to resist, to overturn. He says the betrayal as a form of existence, the lie as a form of existence, and then the cruelty, so much cruelty, and yet it's excused, it's justified. Well, as I say, I could go through more, I suppose, but I want to move on and leave a little bit of time for our history today. Theodore Roosevelt, speaking of history that we want to look back and to appreciate, we'll have some of that in the final segment. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Theodore Roosevelt, by the way, I think he died, just looking at a Google search here real quick. I think he died when he was 61, fairly young man, but boy, what a dynamic life. To think about or to consider what he packed into those 60, 61, 62 years. He was appointed Assistant Secretary of the Navy in 1897 when he was just 38 years old. 38 years of age. And the year after that, the United States declared war on Spain, following years of tension between these two world powers. Spain at the time was occupying Cuba, and that's, of course, on the U.S. doorstep. So it made the United States a little nervous. They had the sinking of this ship down in Cuba. I forget the name of the, maybe it was the Maine. In any event, the United States suspected foul play or suspected that it was more of an attack. And so there's a declaration of war in 1898. And upon learning that America was mobilizing its armed forces to fight the Spanish in Cuba, Roosevelt maneuvered his way right into the action, right to the front lines. This is an up-and-coming politician. He just gets this dream job as the Assistant Secretary of the Navy at the age of 38. And yet he used his political clout to be assigned to the front lines. President McKinley discouraged it. Family members said, "You're crazy." People in his political party said, "You're crazy. Why risk your life? You've got all of this opportunity politically." But Roosevelt, he didn't think that way. He had been saying all through his early years that if his country ever went to war, then he was going to sign up. He said this, I have always intended to act up to my preachings if occasion arose. Now the occasion has arisen and I ought to meet it. I've always intended to do this. I don't care that I'm 38. This was a young politician, but as far as soldiers are concerned, he was old. But he says, I've always intended to do this. So I'm going to follow through. I've told people. I've told people out on the campaign trail. If our country ever goes to war, sign me up. Let me fight for my nation. Let me make the ultimate sacrifice if need be. What a spirit. So the president, McKinley, he offered Roosevelt command of this cavalry regiment, but TR turned it down because he felt like the month-long training to fit into that position, it would take too long. He was expecting a short fight, I guess, so he just wanted to get out there quick. So he accepted a lesser position, assisting Colonel Leonard Wood as lieutenant colonel. That's pretty amazing. Didn't care about the position. He just wanted to get out there and fight. So he goes through 2 weeks of training. He meets up with his regiment in Florida. And by the way, the Navy ships that were going to cart all the supplies and the horses and the soldiers over to Cuba, they were just overloaded because there was so much interest. There was so much zeal, so many young men. They wanted to sign up for this. They showed up in droves back then to fight for America, to fight for America, not against the government, but to fight for it. So in June of 1898, after a few weeks, a couple months of preparation, the U.S. Armed Forces, they were prepared. They were ready to go on the offensive, hoping to drive the Spaniards out of some of their well-fortified strongholds in the mountains of Cuba. And so while heading up this mountain pass, Roosevelt and his regiment, they're marching along straight through a wave of bullets. And those that witnessed the scene could see Teddy Roosevelt just jumping up and down with excitement. He was a lot like Churchill in that way. Churchill got excited about the bullets whizzing overhead. He compared the bullets above him as soft kisses. Churchill did. Roosevelt was much like that. He got excited. He got excited when he saw some live action. This was a firsthand account from a reporter traveling with TR's regiment. It says, then he stepped across the wire himself and from that instant became the most magnificent soldier I have ever seen. He crossed this boundary. He started heading up into the hills. And this reporter says he became the most magnificent soldier I've ever seen. It was as if the barbed wire strand had formed a dividing line in his life and that when he stepped across it, he left behind him in the bridle path all those unadmirable and conspicuous traits which have so often caused him to be justly criticized in civic life and found on the other side of it in that Cuban thicket the coolness, the calm judgment, the towering heroism which made him perhaps the most admired and best loved and best beloved of all Americans in Cuba. Why, he became famous. Back then, these are the heroes that we promoted. These are the heroes that we painted, that we made statues representing. July 1st is the day that made Roosevelt one of America's most beloved military heroes. TR called it his the great day of his life. He, by this point, was promoted to colonel. Their regiment got split up, so he's leading the charge. This famous Rough Riders, you may have heard of the Rough Riders. That's what made Teddy Roosevelt so famous, leading this cavalry charge across this large open field and up the hills, right into these Spanish entrenchments. The regiment was hunkered down on all fours, walking, or rather crawling slowly through the tall grass, hoping to avoid the bullets. And Roosevelt comes along. He's mounted on his horse. He's ready to go straight up the hill. He's waving his sombrero He's yelling at his men, "Are you afraid to stand up when I'm on horseback? Look at where I am. Get up. Let's go. Let's charge. Let's charge ahead." And did they ever? He inspired his men. Those men got up and followed his lead. He led from the front. He led with courage. And they overtook those hills. They drove the Spanish back and eventually out of Cuba. This is a quote from Noel Bush's biography, The Story of Theodore Roosevelt. It says, 2 days later, the Spanish fleet ventured out of Santiago Harbor to its complete destruction, and shortly afterward, the city surrendered. Roosevelt's entire experience in battle had consisted of a week's campaign and one hard day of fighting, but that was sufficient to change the course of the coming century, for it was this victory which first made the United States a great world power, and Roosevelt, now the beloved Teddy of San Juan Hill, was a national hero who would soon guide the destinies of that power. A national hero, and of course he would soon become president of the United States there in the early 1900s. What a man of action. What a man of courage. One observer said of TR that he was pure act. Pure act. Teddy Roosevelt, he said, national unselfishness and self-sacrifice, national self-mastery, and the development of national power can never be achieved by words alone. You see, we can't talk about self-mastery and self-sacrifice. We can't talk about becoming a national power. We've got to take action. This is the way leaders used to think. This is what the major media used to praise. They used to find this quality praiseworthy. Going on the offensive, leading the charge, fighting for country, fighting for your history. Roosevelt said that true leaders, they need courage, foresight, and a willingness to face risks and to undergo effort. TR said it's much easier to be timid than lazy. It's so much easier to be timid, to sit back and to let someone else take action. It's so much easier to be lazy than to be a doer of God's word. We've quoted or referred to Theodore Roosevelt numerous times in our literature, and you know, there's some history there too, where he laid the groundwork for the progressive movement. So it's not like all of the history is glorious. But still, there's a lot that we can take away from it. There's certainly a lot that we can learn about his personal character. There's quite a few biographies. Edmund Morris's is really good, The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt. I think he wrote two volumes, and I've read the first one, not the second one, but the first one's excellent about his early years. And just the way he's described in this biography, this was about TR's youth. Morris says, promptness, excitability, warmth, histrionics, love of plants and animals, physical vitality, delight, sensitivity to birdsong, fascination with military display, humor, family closeness, the conservationist, the natural historian, the hunter, all are here. He had all of it. He loved life. He loved everything about God's creation. And this was a man of action, pure action. Morris went on to say this about his college years. In addition to boxing, wrestling, bodybuilding, and his daily hours of recitation, the young freshman attended weekly dancing classes, hunted in the woods around Cambridge, taught in Sunday school, stuffed and dissected his specimens, organized a whist club, took part in poetry reading sessions, followed the Harvard football team to Yale. This was an active young man. This was a Nobel Prize winner. This was a distinguished author. I forget how many books he wrote. I think he wrote his first one when he was in college. This was an athlete, a hunter, an outdoorsman, all those things. This was an expert, a speed reader, educated in just about every respect. Last month, the New York City Art Council voted unanimously to remove Theodore Roosevelt, the statue, from out in front of the New York Natural History Museum. That statue's been there since 1940. It's been there for 80 years, and now it needs to be canceled. Theodore Roosevelt, as you well know, is also on top of Mount Rushmore, his likeness. How much longer before that needs to be canceled? Like this statue out in front of the New York Natural History Museum. Canceled for what? For saying something insensitive? For saying something or doing something that by today's standards we wouldn't support? That statue, by the way, was dedicated. The one in 1940 was dedicated by Franklin Roosevelt, FDR. Should he be canceled as well? Well, I mean, if you have any connection to TR, and if TR's bad, if TR needs to be deleted, maybe FDR should as well. That council, the New York Art Council, voting to remove that statue, they received full support from the mayor of New York City, Mayor de Blasio. Here's what he said about Theodore Roosevelt. This is, clip 9.
And I think Roosevelt himself is another one of these complex figures in American history. He did some extraordinarily progressive things that we feel to this day. And he did some things that I think are deeply troubling.
He did some things that are deeply troubling, says Mayor de Blasio. Look at all of the deeply troubling things that de Blasio, Andrew Cuomo, look at what they're getting away with on a daily basis. And yet there they are sitting high atop, perched high atop on their righteous throne, so to speak, puffed up with vanity and self-righteousness, issuing their decrees in the case of Andrew Cuomo's March 25th decree to send those COVID patients back into the nursing homes. And yet there's Andrew Cuomo's brother on TV last night, convinced that Herman Cain died because he went to a rally a couple of months ago, and yet says nothing about that March 25 decree. Nothing. That's the mayor of New York City today saying that there's things in Teddy Roosevelt's history that are not just troubling, deeply troubling. That's a shame to see this history being erased by people like this, that New York City Art Council, the mayor of New York City. Is he really a complex figure? You mean that's the takeaway? Studying into TR's life, reading a biography or two about his life, that's the big takeaway, that he was complex and deeply troubling? He was a man of action. He was a family man. He was incredibly educated. He wanted to expand America's global influence and power. He had courage, as you can see from that Rough Riders example. He spoke truth. And what a positive mental attitude. What a positive mental attitude he had. That's an example that we can learn a lot from. We can glean a lot from this history and from so much of the other historical figures that we covered during SCP. We've talked about a few of them on this show the last couple of weeks, and we'll continue to do so. Tomorrow, I'll try to pick up tomorrow. Monday, it's already Friday, but look, I've been traveling internationally. So you'll have to cut me a little bit of slack here. But we're here at Edstone. We're back at it. We're just a week away from the new semester. at Armstrong College. So lots going on. We're about to get the new students coming over from the Edmond campus. So lots of excitement going on here at the Edstone campus. As I said, we have a beautiful wedding planned for this Sunday, in addition to this church campout that we're enjoying on the beautiful campus of Edstone. So we'll resume our study of this history on Monday's program. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can write us at td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. Thanks for joining us all week, and we'll see you Monday.